Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday, March 21st, 2024 on Connecticut Today, where we welcomed back to the show Connecticut Restaurant Association head Scott Dolge to talk about a proposed move to eliminate the so-called tip wage provision for state restaurant workers. Only in Bridgeport.com blogger Lenny Grimaldi stopped by. More details he had about a reported warning issued to some Bridgeport municipal employees.
This controversy that I kind of knew was up in Hartford, hanging around, and it's popped up again. A lot of you, if you've ever waited tables, worked in a restaurant, or had a son or daughter, grandson, granddaughter work there, you know there's a tipped wage, a wage at which you can agree to work for, which makes you make less on the books, but you more than make up for it in tips. Well, there's a push now, and a bill came out of committee the other day to get rid of that, pushed mainly by an out-of-state group. So it remains to be seen whether or not this is going to have any teeth with it. Scott Dolge joins us. We haven't had Scott on for a while. Last time I checked was back during the pandemic. Scott, it's Paul here again. How are you? How you been?
I've been good, Paul. Thanks, as always, for having me on. I know it has been a little while.
Yeah, so let's talk about this, Scott. Now, Connecticut has what's called a tipped wage. There's an option here, right? It's a lower wage, but as far as the servers that I see on a regular basis, many guys and gals want to work for that, Scott, because they want to make their money in tips, correct?
Yeah, so just for the listeners out there, it's actually not even a wage. It's called a tip credit. So there's in the state of Connecticut, we have a tip credit where we call it a credit because it's the owner that takes the credit. That number, which for a server is $6.38 per hour, and for a bartender, it's $8.23 per hour. It's that amount of money plus their tips have to equal $15.69, which is the current minimum wage. So every server and bartender in the state of Connecticut by federal and state law is guaranteed to make minimum wage. The difference is they have that credit that the owner is able to take, and they have to either make up the difference. Let's say someone only makes $2 an hour in tips, then the credit has to be $13.69, not $6.38. But that never happens like we talked about, because these servers are making on average between $33 to $38 an hour, the servers and bartenders in Connecticut. And, you know, obviously this piece of legislation, to your point, listening to the open here, that is coming from outside groups and obviously representing the industry in our state. It's important for me to make sure the facts are there. And we actually, you know, not only last year asked the owner operators about this and how it would change their business and hurt our small independent restaurants, but we also did a survey this year of close to 500. I think we had 446 servers and bartenders from Connecticut that filled out a survey. They could have said they don't want this. They do want this. It is up to them. It was totally open. And we had almost 500 fill it out in about 6 days, and 96% of those surveyed are against this legislation. They do not want this. They know they'll receive less money if this was to happen. Their tips will go down. I mean, the numbers are proof in what's happening in Washington, D.C., and out in Chicago. And I don't want our state to turn that way. And I hope that – I know it got out of committee, but I'm hoping that this bill does not make it to one of the floors for vote, you know, this session.
Yeah, and Scott, look, it is frustrating. And I mentioned this earlier in the week on the show when talking about this. It's frustrating because – from what I see, and I'm looking at this from the upper deck, granted you're on the field with all this, but from what I see, Scott, I haven't seen the mass protests. I haven't seen any sort of formal action targeting you or your group or the restaurant owners in the state about this. In fact, Scott, I go to a couple of, you know, two or three of my local hangouts where I live, mm-hmm. and one is a mid-level national chain. Don't have to mention what it is, but the food's good, the drink's good, the prices are good. So I go there maybe once a week to kind of treat myself, and I tend to see the same server on a Sunday night or Sunday afternoon every week. And I told her, I said, hey, she knows I'm in this business. And I told her what was going on, and her jaw hit the floor. She's like, no, she goes, no, I like it the way it is. I said, well, you should know this is happening. So, Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but has there been this mass outcry that maybe I missed from employees to change this or not?
There has not at all, Paul. I think exactly what you're doing is what I tell legislators in the state, whether it's the governor or our leaders or any district legislator, to go into their restaurant that everyone goes into and talk to. Don't talk to the owner. Talk to the service staff. Talk to your server. Talk to your bartender. They're well-versed on how they're paid better than anyone else. They understand the model. They understand how tip credit works and what they're making. And they do not want to see that change. And, you know, there's so many reasons, as we talk about this, Paul, that people need to understand. It will affect their wages. It will affect consumer pricing and what our customers can afford to go out to eat. You know, and understand that it's not the only way. I guess I asked this to legislators. They're saying, no, we want them to get paid full minimum wage plus their tips. Well, then my question is, it's a $9.11, I believe it's $9.21 difference between the current tip credit for a server and minimum wage. Mm-hmm. So that's $9.21 times every server for every hour they work. Where is that money? The only way a restaurant can survive, as we all know, restaurants are hard enough to gone through the pandemic, everything else. The only way they can do that is to pass that off to the customers, and they'll do some of that already. So the prices of hamburgers or pizzas or everything else will have to go up. But then also they'll either inflict a service charge, because that's the difference, is they stop really putting out tips and say, hey, we have to put a 20% service charge, which is happening in Washington, D.C. right now. I think 80% of the restaurants have gone to that. And right now, when you leave a tip at the table, that tip, 100% of it goes to that server or to the bartender at that would change. Then the service charge would go to the house and pay all these added labor costs and everything else than the rising wages. So that's what I don't want to see. And that's why I would say the owners aren't in favor of this as well, because their servers are their face, their family. They're the other thing I would say, we're in the service industry. When you walk into a restaurant, you want your servers and your bartenders to be happy, because that's who you are going to interact with.
Yep.
And if they give you a great experience, you want to come back. So I know both parties, the employer and the employees, are not asking for this in Connecticut. I hope any legislators listening understand that. This is coming from a One Fair Wage, a national organizing group and labor union group that is trying to push this narrative. And I think it'll be detrimental and devastating for our industry in Connecticut.
And Scott, and the guest is Scott Dolch from the Connecticut Restaurant Association here, looking at this push by One Fair Wage to get rid of the lower hourly charge for restaurant employees, servers, and bartenders who would rather work for that charge and get tips, in which they make much more, much better an hour than appears. Scott, did I also see in the news accounts I read about this, that even if restaurants here in Connecticut, if this passed, want to go with that service charge model that I did see, right, is being used in Chicago and in Washington, there would even be constraints on that as well. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah. There's the same group that is trying to push to eliminate the tip credit in the state is also trying to eliminate service charges for owner operators in D.C. and Chicago. how can a restaurant survive would be my question. We're in one of the most difficult industries. The average profit margin for a restaurant nationally is 3 to 5%. So when you think about any increases in labor, I mean, this is like 125% increase across the board. So this is just something that, I'm hoping that our legislators are listening and understand that this is a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. And, let's just look at it that way. And also, every single employee in Connecticut in our industry is guaranteed the minimum wage. And that's the biggest thing, is that's what the minimum wage is. It continues to go up but with the indexing and everything else. We understand that, and we know that if you ever worked in this industry, I think other people will say that too, you want to become a server and bartender. You work your way up to those roles because you're one of the highest paid in the industry, and you have flexibility, and you get to make your hours. That all changes if we were to lose the tip credit. In that way where, that's, and then also the service that our customers would receive, in my opinion, changes. People go over to Europe all the time and they're like, well, those people aren't really, You know, they're just paid a flat wage.
Yeah.
That's what it is, and that's the service I get. I don't want that in our state.
That's a good point.
I hope that our listeners don't want it either.
Yeah, it's a good point. Finally, Scott, I did have one of my contributors who covered this for a media outlet, and one thing I think we feel we have to bring up here is, I guess, part of the argument here, Scott, and you probably heard this more than regular people because you attended these hearings, is that, well, you do have some unscrupulous operators there out there who are not making their employees whole if, in fact, they don't get tips or their tips are not bringing them up to that full minimum wage. You know, Scott, hearing that, I said, well, you know, if there's a problem in a boat and most of the boat is okay and there may be a leak in one part of the boat, fix the leak. And my other supposition here, Scott, is maybe some of those operators are holding this over the heads of some of these hardworking people because, geez, I don't know, their immigration status or whatever. I don't know about you, Scott, but let's go after those people before we toss the whole system here.
Paul, you kind of answered the answer is exactly how I would say. My whole thing is this. You know, if there's a bad actor, I try to represent the entire industry. There's 8,600 food service locations. If there's a bad actor, I said this in the hearing to the proponents of the bill. If you have a restaurant that is not paying people full minimum wage, you know, www.ctrestaurant.org and send us a note, and I will go with the head of the Department of Labor today because that affects our whole industry. But this piece of legislation isn't going to fix that. If you think that's going to fix bad actors, if that was even happening, but I hate to tell you, Paul, when I bring that up, I say to them, they've said they brought in servers that said, oh, they weren't paid at full wage. And I ask them, hey, where do you work? Let me know. Like, I want to know because I don't. That's not right. That I feel bad for you. And they won't answer those questions.
Yeah, so they won't answer.
So they'll say, hey, listen, Scott, like they don't want to jeopardize their job. I'm like, let me get this straight. You don't want to jeopardize a job that you're not even being paid full minimum wage for? Mm-hmm. That is tough for me to swallow to hear those sides of the argument because at the end of the day, like this is an incredible industry. We have incredible owner operators. We have incredible restaurants in our state. And this piece of legislation is and what's hurting the most, Paul, it's hurting in D.C. It's hurting small independent restaurants.
Sure.
And in Connecticut, 97% of our full service restaurants are independently owned.
Yep.
We're the number one state in the country for independently owned restaurants. This legislation is a direct target of hurting, you know, what we all know in Connecticut and why we love our restaurants.
Yeah. All right, Scott, we'll keep together on this. Keep in touch. Scott Dolch, Connecticut Restaurant Association. Scott, thank you. We appreciate the time.
Thanks, Paul, as always, for the time.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Scott. Let's talk to a guy who at last look is not trying to liquidate his assets to cover a bond or any fines he owns. Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, how are you?
How we doing, Uncle Paulie?
We doing all right there, brother?
We're doing just fine.
Not liquidating any assets like your former boss?
Yeah, you know, he's a beauty. And the thing about him that burns him more than anything else is perception that he's broke or he's hemorrhaging money.
Yeah.
And when I worked for him, he would say, you know, Lenny, never, ever admit you're broke. Ever. Even if you are, just don't admit it.
I guess I shouldn't either. That's my current state. We'll get to a little more on that to wrap up as we used to. And Lenny, you're breaking up a little, so if you can move around, I'd appreciate it. All right, couple things here. Let's start with the feel-good story here. How about this? A two-seat plane built by Bridgeport High School students. Tell us about this.
Yeah, it is a really nice story. So, Bassick students at Bassick High School for the last couple of years have been working with a nonprofit organization called Tango Flight, and they work with school systems around the country. They're aircraft builders, and they were inspiring the next generation of aeronautics. And so Bassick High School has an affiliation with them. Bassick is the first inner city school in the country to be affiliated with this Tango Flight program. OIB, there's a link, the background of this organization. So it's quite an inspirational story that the kids have built this, constructed a two-seat plane. It's done. They've been building it in parts at the high school and at the Sikorsky Memorial Airport.
Yeah.
And they are now awaiting FAA flight approval to go to the skies. So and they expect that the kids will be in flight before the end of the school year, assuming everything goes well with the FAA approval.
So who will actually pilot this, Lenny? I mean, a local pilot, somebody who mentors them? Do any of the kids have licenses? Who's going to fly this?
So this will be in conjunction with professionals at the Tango Flight Program that mentor the kids, have worked with them. And so they'll be involved in that part of the process. But what they do is they provide all of the equipment, all of the tools
wow.
that the kids can work with. So it's what it's doing is it's building a trade for these kids that could come out of Bassett High School and graduate and go right into aeronautics. And I think one has already found a job. With an affiliate at the airport, a student that graduated last year. So they could segue directly into jobs in aeronautics. And you know, the Bassett High School, a new one, is under construction
yeah.
in South End of Bridgeport next to the UB campus. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have that blend of a high school atmosphere on a university campus. And they're doing all kinds of stuff, architecture, aeronautics, advanced manufacturing, military sciences, firefighting. They got all kinds of state-of-the-art programs that the kids will be taking up, projected to start August 2025.
What an amazing program, Lenny. Here you have kids, and you don't know, hopefully maybe down the road one of these kids becomes a licensed airline mechanic, or they make a lot of money. Trust me, got to rebuild those engines. An airline pilot, something like that, an aeronautical engineer. And the other trades you mentioned, too. You know, Lenny, in this whole era now where we're rethinking, well, is college really worth it? Can anybody afford it? This is just a fabulous program, really.
Yeah, there's a great dimension to it. You know, it's great that we're building stuff again, right? I mean, how long mm-hmm. do we get away from that? It's at least the start of something, you know, for these inner city kids that, you know, one of them, you know, there's a report, you know, on YouTube I put on my site. I mean,
yeah.
she was just in tears. She was absolutely in tears because 4 or 5 years ago, she had no clue what she was going to do,
wow.
what opportunities were available, you know, from this program that's really elevated her quality of life and it's going to give her a career.
Great stuff. Okay, this is interesting. And when I saw this, I think the other day in the post, I was like, And then you sent me a little heads up to another angle of this, Lenny. A notice to moonlighting city employees. No, this is such a great story. No hitching during work hours. Lenny, what might be going on here and why?
Well, you have a number of city employees who are justices of the peace.
Yeah.
You know, they could be JPs, they could be ministers, they could be lawyers, and they have the capacity to conduct marriage ceremonies. And this isn't just going on here. It's going on all over the place.
Okay, yeah.
Right? So, but it's intriguing that it went on enough that the city's new chief administrative officer, Tom Godet, sent out a communication to all city employees and said, listen, you're not allowed to marry anybody on taxpayer time. All right? And so this was apparently going on. They go to the Vital Stats office.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you walk into the government center, the Margaret Moore Government Center, and it's right there.
Yeah.
And so a lot of marriage ceremonies were going on. But also kind of the dirty little secret, but not so much of the secret, is having non-citizens who are going there. And, you know, they're paying fees to get married. And I think that's part of this as well. You know, so, you know, my question to you is, Uncle Paulie, how much would you command to marry somebody?
I don't know. I'd have to consult my executive assistant, who you happen to be talking to. But I don't know. So do you think Mr. Gaudette, I know you don't want to put words in his mouth, but you do highlight things. Did he get a little high sign, or was this a dirty little secret that's been, I don't know, going on? Were they looking at that situation in New Haven with that city clerk, who I guess is now resigned, and everybody got mad at her because she was notifying people in Hartford? Could any or all of that been in play here?
Yeah, I don't know how deep this is going to go. He just got on the job. Gaudette served as Mayor Joe Ganim's deputy chief
sure,
of staff.
Yeah.
New chief administrative officer. And so he's saying that there's been a high volume of complaints coming to the office that, city employees were officiating marriages on city time. And so that's I think what we're talking about was a part of that. Sure, of course. I think it's going to be more like, cut it out. Let's see what happens. And if it continues, we'll dig deeper into it. But, we'll see what happens with it. But just, there are a lot of people out there that, some are non-citizens, and they're getting hitched so they can stay around.
Sure, yeah.
And the flip side of that, okay, I actually know people that have received $10,000, $20,000 to marry somebody.
Oh, sure. That's the oldest trick in the book. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's so people are willing to pay.
Wow. 20 large? Do they need any help? No, I'm just kidding. You know, what I could do, Lenny, is I could do, I used to disc jockey weddings years ago when I had more hair and fewer pounds. So I could give them a little instant first dance there, with the groom. And right there. So I could set up right there. What do you think? Idea or what?
I'm all for supplemental income. You're a big capitalist, right? Why not?
That's right. Speaking of
about this. So officiates in the state of Connecticut, if you're a JP, you can charge whatever you want.
Yeah.
You're not limited to $250 or $300. Some tell me that's the going rate, something like that. But you can charge more. So, think about it. If you do one a day, that's nice.
Especially if I don't declare it. No, I have an old radio friend who does it, and she does. She's got a very nice setup, and she's justice of the peace, and she really enjoys it, too. Finally, Lenny, your old boss, Mr. Trump, listen, I know he's getting banged around in this court case and that court case, but again, another poll came out a couple of days ago. It is still a statistical dead heat. I know everybody on the Democratic side is saying, hey, just wait. We're going to carpet bomb this guy with commercials. But he's still leading, Lenny, in most, if not all of the swing states. You alluded to this before, but just to close out here, what do you think he's thinking right now?
He's feeling really pinched. This is a real pain in the butt for him because he's got to come up with, almost $500 million.
Jeez.
And underwriting companies don't want to cough it up. He's got to do this by Monday. One thing could save him because his media company is going to go public within the next couple of days. So that could be a revenue source that would inflate, his value, his net value. But this is really tricky for him because for a couple of reasons. One, he doesn't like the thought of anyone perceiving that he's hemorrhaging money because that saves the brand, right?
Yeah.
So two, this is how it could impact the election. You have many voters, millions of voters, many of them are non-college educated whites who live vicariously through him as a success story.
Sure.
That's what they see. And this would gore a hole into that thought process. But also, and a third point of this is, he could be, if she doesn't come up with the money, he could be very vulnerable, to a foreign despot who could just say, hey, I'm going to give you $500 million and you become president. Now I own you. So these are all things that could play out in the election cycle, depending on what's going on. It's Attorney General, in New York. She's a tiger. She's already talking about, I'm going to seize your assets.
Jeez.
So, this is a real toothache for him.
All right. Lenny Grimaldi, of course, the guy, the website onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny, thank you, and we'll chat next week. Have a great weekend, my friend. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. a lot.
All right, there you go. There you go. All right.